What's up, iRaiders? Welcome to episode 14 of iRations, The Uplifter. I am your host, Drake Peterson, and for those of you who are joining us for the first time, welcome. This is our weekly podcast. We are here on all podcast platforms every week to raise your spirits, answer some questions, talk music, talk shop, and of course, talk all things iRation. It is album release week here at the iRation Camp. Everyone's got a big smile on their face. The tequila is flowing, and we are stoked for you to have this new album to add to your collection. Before I bring on the Micahs on for Sample This, let's go over a little bit of news. We just announced that on July 9th at 7 p.m., the entire band is going to be doing a live stream show. You got Micah Poosh on guitar and vocals, Micah Brown on vocals and guitar, Kaysen Peterson on keyboards, Adam Taylor on the bass, Joe Dickens on the drums, myself on trumpet and keyboards, and Tony Tromboni on the trombone. By the way, Tony, congratulations. He just became a father last week to a beautiful baby boy named Finn. So congrats to you, Tony. We love you, love you, love you. Anyways, all of us will be live from the Soho Music Club in Santa Barbara on Thursday, July 9th at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. If you want to go watch us, go to nocapshows.com. Again, that's nocap, C-A-P, shows.com, or visit irationmusic.com for news and updates. And once again, Coastin is out in just a couple of days on July 10th. It will be available on all platforms. You can go and get some fun merch and bundles at store.irationmusic.com. It's now time for Sample This, where we take one iRation song and break it down. In this segment, you will be hearing samples and sound clips from the studio version of Learn From Me. This heartfelt track closes out the new album, Coastin, which is out July 10th. Joining me today are both Micah Pouchel and Micah Brown. What's up, boys?
Sadu.
Sadu. Sadu. So Learn From Me is a song about wanting to be your best self for your child. It is about recognizing that children grow and learn from their parents first and foremost. So Micah, obviously this is a song that you wrote for your child, Hannah. When did you start writing this song?
Ooh, I mean, I could look at my phone at the exact date, but it was sometime before she was born, maybe a couple months before she was born. I just felt like, you know, I needed to have at least one song that was, you know, dedicated to her and just specifically, and whether or not we used it as a, you know, a song for iRation was a whole nother thing. But, you know, that's how I get my creativity out in my world. Obviously I'm not really good at any other art forms. I'm like terrible at like painting or drawing or whatever. So that's my outlet.
Golf is an art form, right?
True. Yeah, but you know, even that, I'm not the best.
That's a whole nother episode.
Whole nother thing. But so it was just a song, and I was just, you know, strumming on my guitar at my house and just trying to come up with some chords that I felt like, you know, were, you know, made sense and felt right. And then the song kind of just came really quickly. I wrote it probably less than an hour, just really quick, just all the things, just kind of wanted to go really stream of consciousness. I was in the moment, in the mood of, you know, what I was feeling, and kind of connected to that. And sometimes that's when you do your best work, I think, you know, as a songwriter, is when you're like really feeling something. And I think it just makes getting your point and getting the words across a lot easier. Just be when they're present, when you're feeling it in the moment, that's the best time to create, I think. So, yeah.
This song was recorded sometime around, I'm thinking, November of last year. And this was the one song that was done live. Just the two of you guys were recording it. It's a pretty stripped down song with very minimal production to it. Micah Brown, when you were playing with Poosh, did he give you a guitar line, or were you pretty much just kind of freestyling, or how did that process work?
I think it's the same chords all the way through, and it's a pretty simple chord progression. And I think the simplicity of the song is very beautiful. And like he was saying, it was kind of that stream of conscious kind of lyric style writing, where not every rhyme may be a perfect rhyme, or it's not like super overthought, I think. And I think that's what makes it really cool and raw. And so for me with the guitar too, it was kind of the same thing. I was just playing those chords, and I didn't want to overcomplicate things. but I also, you know, I do have an attention to detail with certain things. So like differentiating kind of the playing strums on different parts of like the verse between the chorus and that kind of stuff is just what I focused on, so that it gave it a little bit of dynamic within that construct of being fully stripped and acoustic, and adding a little bit of those little hammer on, pull off, counter melody, finger pick kind of thing is just what I do. Like even if any chord progression, when I start playing it, if I play a chord progression long enough, I'm going to start implementing just little things that I hear based on my style, you know? And so I think, yeah, I knew the chords for a couple days and I sat with them in the studio. And when you're in the studio, there's a lot of time to kill. So I think I probably was just sitting there jamming those chords for a while and came up with some little ditties that kind of fit into the holes of the lyrics and made it a little bit extra special, I guess. And that's, you know, I didn't want to overthink it, just like he didn't overthink it. And so I think that was kind of what made it cool, is like, it's very in the moment as far as like the style and the inspiration of it, you know?
Yeah. And I think that that is outside of the, you know, the zone that we generally work in. So it's, you know, it felt cool doing that and changing it up. I think, you know, it's easy. MB and I, you know, for the most part, I think it's easiest for us to kind of, if we're playing guitar together or whatever, we're pretty quick about like figuring out a groove or like, you know, working together on stuff like that. And so, you know, it just went really easy. The whole point of the song was for it to be very simple and like a lullaby kind of feel. And yeah, I think it came out really cool.
In the beginning of this song, you have your daughter's heartbeat from, was that an ultrasound?
Yeah, it's an ultrasound. I just had it on my phone, and it was kind of one of those things where we were like, hey, you know, that, you know, it'd be kind of cool to, I remember if it was Dave's idea or my idea or whatever, but it was just like, that'd be really cool to kind of just start the song with the heartbeat. And yeah, we got it off my phone. I think we just put it into, took the video and put it on, you know, took the audio track and put it into the session, and Dave did it. And it's really cool. I think that it really added another emotional layer to the song. I've had some feedback from the people that have heard it that have kids, and they're all just like, you know, big manly men that are saying they're just like breaking down in tears and stuff. So I think that's the right reaction that we're kind of going for. It's hard for me to listen to the song, to be honest. Like I can barely listen to it. And like, it's just, it hit, it's really like an emotional song for me. So it's like, I don't always want to go into that like emotional state all the time, you know? So it's a hard song for me to listen to all the time just because it's does hit, but it's like, you know, that's the whole point. You know, some people really like to feel those feelings, and like, you know, obviously if it means something to them, that's, it's special. It means something to me.
I was going
to
say, I don't even have kids, and I, you know, even I'm like not a crier either, but I've definitely teared up listening to it just because you put yourself in like your friend's shoes, you know, and you're like, man, this is awesome. And we have, for some reason, we have so many, like everybody in our circle of friends has had like a baby girl in the last couple of years. So there's a lot of guys that relate to this one right now, which is, it's cool to see.
Yeah. And it's, and it doesn't necessarily have to be, I mean, obviously it's kind of directly about a girl, but it obviously the understanding could be put onto it. Anything. And it's even like before we had a daughter, you know, stuff like that, I'd look at Rolo and be like, get emotional just looking at my dog, and like, you know, just these little innocent beings, you know, is really what comes down to.
Having a baby is obviously very life-changing, but knowing that Hannah will one day go through your catalog of songs, is this going to affect your lyrics and your songwriting moving forward?
Oh, probably. I mean, I think I've always kind of had that like thought of like, you know, this is something that the music that we make and the music that we put out is going to be heard. I mean, it's going to be around forever, hopefully, you know, at least for a few years. So, I mean, everything lives now forever on the internet. So, you know, my kids could be able to, in the future, maybe grandkids and great grandkids will be like, oh, great grandpa Poosh made some music back in the early turn of the century. And well, it was pretty cool. And like, I mean, I guess they're Southern now or something, Midwestern, but my family's migrating east. Yeah. But no, but I mean, you know, it's you kind of, whether or not it affects the songwriting process, it's something that I definitely think about. Like, oh, you know, people I know are going to listen to the songs. Like you want to put something out there that, you know, that you're proud of. I mean, ultimately, it doesn't really matter who is listening to it, but, you know, maybe it's subconsciously.
Yeah, we have a lot of fans who have kids too. And so I think we've always somewhat maybe subconsciously just kind of steered away from vulgar language and like too overtly like obscene kind of subject matter, you know, in a way, just because that's kind of our style. So I think that will always be a constant anyways. I think we don't drop too many F-bombs in our songs just because it's not our style really, you know?
Yeah, there's
just once every show when Micah yeah. Brown goes, make some fucking noise.
Yeah, one a show.
Live is a different.
Yeah.
Good, a good F-bomb here and there is not, doesn't never
it gets
hurt
the
anybody.
Crowd pumped just, up, right?
Yeah.
Will this be a song that is similar to No Letter where when people ask you to play it, you're like, oh, this is a little rough, like, because it's so emotional? Or will you be playing this on the next tour?
No, I mean, I'm down to play it. I mean, I think it definitely has a better emotional quotient to it than No Letter. No Letter is such a sad song, you know, it's about like a breakup. And it's like, this song is definitely about something more positive and like uplifting and sweet as opposed to, you know, being sad. So I think a big reason why I didn't like playing No Letter was just because it was such a sad song and like, it just felt weird to like cap a show off it with like a super, super sad song as opposed, you know, when we're really the whole point of Iration and like, you know, our main goal is to like let everybody walk out of the venue in like a good, a better mood than when they walked in. And it's like, you know, you nail them with like a downer ass, like sad song at the end of the set. And then everybody's like, shit, man. Like, so I think that was just, and plus it's kind of a really hard for me. It's a really hard song to sing. So it's like, if there was like a double kind of, and so this song, I think I would be more open to playing for sure. I think people would, if people want to hear it. Yeah, for sure.
Which one of you played the ukulele? Was it you, Poosh, or was it UMB?
I think it was me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good thing. Cause MB and I actually were lucky enough to play music at Michelle Wee's wedding. And so it kind of forced me to pick up the ukulele again and start tooling around on it and just getting comfortable on it again because I played it for her wedding. And so that kind of worked out. I think it was around the similar timing where we had been kind of practicing at least or playing a little bit on it. And so, yeah. And I just, you know, basically just played the chords, nothing too crazy. But
plus, you got that sweet ook that has the Iration and inlays in it too. So
yeah, right here. It's right here.
See it.
Well, it says Iration on it.
Is that a Kala?
It is a Lea, L-E-A. They're based in Austin, Texas, actually. And my buddy Ryan that lives there knows the guy that, you know, makes the instruments and was nice enough to get it made for me, which was really cool just because I hooked him up at some shows. He's my buddy I went to college with, so. But yeah, it's really nice. And the neck, which cool, what I like about it is the neck is thicker, like a more of a guitar feeling neck than a ukulele, which for me with kind of big grubby hands, like feels better to play, you know, not trying to like play in these little tiny frets, like.
is that considered a concert ukulele or is it like a soprano?
I think it's it's a tenor. So it's like it's kind of an in-betweener. It's weird. It's like an in-between two different sizes, so.
Is that pretty standard in Hawaii for people to learn the ukulele?
Yeah, it's like the recorder, you know, in most schools over here. You kind of learn the ukulele just because it doesn't hurt your fingers. It's with nylon strings, and it's four strings, and it's very simple. The cordage takes a lot less finger dexterity and stuff like that to really get it going. It's a very good beginner instrument. That's why I think they're so popular now, like, nationally popular. You know, you see all kinds of artists using them, recording with them, and they are crazy popular at like Guitar Center and stuff because they're just a good beginner instrument for kids, and they're not loud. I think parents probably like, if their kid doesn't know how to play them, they don't sound awful. You know, it's not like a trumpet where your kid's like.
It's a shame we don't adopt that over here on the mainland because recorders literally are awful, especially when you have like 50 kids playing them at the same time.
I think they're probably just cheap to get, right? Because they're just like a big plastic thing and probably cost like, you know, 10 cents to make them or something.
You can get a pretty cheap ook at the Mexico border too, though. They're $20, $30 tops.
Love it.
after you get your puppy.
Grab a puppy, grab some churros, ukulele.
There's a little bit of background vocals on here, and it sounds like this effect that I've used called Little Altar Boy. Is that what it is for the parts that are doubling? The ooze?
I think it is, actually, yeah. Dave kind of did it after the fact. But yeah, he uses that effect sometimes to kind of create some depth on the vocal and maybe get some harmonies that are not, they're just are more subtle, you know? Mm-hmm. It's funny, my mom asked me about that. She's like, who's singing the harmonies on your vocal on Learn From You? I was like, I think it's like a...
I think it's just an octave. It's like an octave up from his actual voice, which we did on other tracks. Like, I think Fly With Me has that effect on it too. Uh-huh. Where it's just like, if you're in a nice vocal range and then to go a full octave up would be really hard for your voice. It's like, it sounds nice and smooth, but it's just that higher pitch.
It's like, it's a texture thing, you know? It's kind of like, you know, playing a 12-string guitar rather than playing a 6-string or, you know, something like that.
Well, gentlemen, is there anything else you guys want to talk about on this song?
So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Learn From Me, you know, just in the basic message in the song is about how, you know, basically when you're having, I think it's when you're having a kid or you're, you know, you're taking care of somebody that's a young person that you're kind of forced to look at yourself ultimately because you're the number one role model for them in their life. And you have to kind of examine all the things that you're demonstrating as a person, because that's what they're going to basically take from you, you know? And so for me, that was my biggest, you know, confrontation with myself was like, you know, this person is basically my responsibility for the rest of their life for the most part. And, she's going to pick up all the little things that I do and the things that I say and the things that I, you know, the bad parts of me and the good parts of me. And so I'm trying to minimize the bad parts to try and make sure she doesn't pick those up, you know, and try to be, you know, teach her the lessons that I've learned in life, you know, which were, you know, I was able to follow my dreams to be a musician and do what I love to do for a living. You know, the only thing I could try to do as a father is to try to give her the same opportunity, you know, and support her, whatever she wants to do. My parents were, and I think all of our parents, you can attest to, were super supportive of all of us in our endeavors and what we wanted to do. And I think that's really what, you know, opens the doors for kids. Speak of the devil.
There she is. I hear.
I like the last lyric too, because you flip it on its head with the very last line, and it's also the last line of the album, which is cool. But just saying that you'll learn from her too, you know, and just this experience of becoming a parent is definitely going to be a learning experience. And also, you know, as kids, I think kids have a lot of influence on their parents at some point too, you know, like, because they see the world from a different perspective eventually when they start to develop their own personality.
I think it's also relevant to the time we're in right now with all of this ignorance and like hate that's kind of exposing itself in the country. That's taught, you know, basically is, you know, you meet little kids, you talk to little kids. My wife's a first grade teacher, and they don't, she, when she mentioned, you know, she has a talk with them about, you know, racism and race and things like that. And they're just like, they honestly don't know. They're like, look at each other and they're like, oh my God, your skin is brown. Like your skin, they didn't even know. They don't even notice. It's like, it's 100% a taught thing. And so teaching, you know, little kids about hatred is a thing, and ignorance is a thing that's happening in the country, you know, and we're in the midst of Pride and we're in the midst of, you know, BLM. And it's like, those are taught things. And it's like, if we can just everybody, you know, if everybody looked at themselves as, you know, all these things are passed from generation to generation. They're not inherent when a child is born. A child is born as a innocent, loving being. And it's basically formed, you know, for the most part from that point on. So I think it's maybe less direct of that in that nature, but that's, you know, kind of what it's about is like, I'm just going to try and pass on the most, you know, the love and the things that my parents gave to me, and hopefully it's good enough, you know. It's all you can do.
Well, you're going to be a great father. You already are. And thank you, boys, for being here.
Thank you, Drake.
Thank you, Drake.
Dad. Gosh. Thanks, Dad.
You're a good cat father. Cat stepfather.
Stepfather, yeah. Now joining us to celebrate the album release week, our bassist Adam Taylor, keyboardist Kason Peterson, and drummer Yo Deakins. What's going on, boys? Thanks for joining us.
What a do.
Yo. What's up? Penis.
Sada.
Yo, yo.
Penis.
Kason, you've been back on the mainland for a couple weeks. How's it feel to be back to this part of the world?
It feels very, very good. It's a lot colder here. It's cold.
Yeah, you're wearing literally two layers.
It's 83 degrees outside.
This is not Hawaii weather. What's happening?
Is it mainland cold? Or are we talking COVID
ice cold?
Mainland and, cold.
Adam, you just became a homeowner. How does it feel?
It feels pretty good. I'm really stoked on the neighborhood here in Ventura. It just seems like the unpacking and jobs and projects never seems to end.
And just if you guys were wondering, Adam's address is 143578.
That's right. Catch me.
Stop by and say hi. Drop a banana bread loaf off. Hey, man, have a beer, whatever.
Absolutely.
Take an avocado to go.
Joe Dickens, how are you today? Is everything going well?
Amazing. Can't complain.
What are you most excited about for album release week?
Just the release. Get it out there. It's ready.
Release.
You can't hold on to it. It's so hot, you know?
I'm really looking forward to just seeing all the... I love seeing the reactions and the comments and just reading all the fan responses.
Adam reads every comment and response. So if you got something to say to him, just type it on out there.
Air it out.
The eye in the sky.
MB, we're doing the live stream this week. What is your... what song are you excited to play the most?
Probably Kason. I think that would be fun to play. Just because it's... I don't know. It's a vibe. It's positive. It's happy. It'll probably be fun.
What about you, Poosh?
What are we playing?
Wait, where are we?
I don't know. I think I'm excited to play all of them, but I think Guava Lane probably a banger. We're going to play that one live. Is that where we're going to do that?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
That one will be good. Yeah.
So we just had a lovely chat about Learn From Me, which was the final song of this album. And since this song is about Micah's baby girl, Hannah, we are going to have a little discussion on the topic. And the topic is, who is going to have a baby next?
Drake.
Yes. I've been trying. It's just not working for some reason.
Eat more.
Eat more, yeah.
Eat burritos. But
today's discussion is, what is one valuable thing your parents have taught you? And just as a side note, it could be something that they tried to teach you at one point, but you also just ignored and then found out the hard way. Okay, so it's a little bit of a deeper discussion today. Adam, why don't you go first?
Okay. One thing I think that I've learned from my parents, and I think it's because they're both very different, kind of like how my brother and I are very different. I'm more right brain. My brother's probably more left brain. But I think through my mom, she's always kind of taught me to pursue my dreams and kind of go for it and take risks. Whereas I think my dad is more pragmatic and plays on the safe side of things. And I think through what we do, that's kind of been beneficial in, you know, a few ways where, you know, chasing your dreams in the very beginning is always daunting because you're living through uncertainty, you're kind of broke, your friends are kind of like, get a real job kind of thing. Whereas with my dad too, he kind of instilled, you know, work hard and also always a little bit of, not pessimism, but just trying to think things through and make sure you're kind of covering all your bases. So I think both my parents have kind of led me on the right path to where we are now, and I'm thankful for their
lessons.
Thanks
to the Taylor family. Kason, how about you?
I'd say it's different between my mom and my dad. I would say from my mom, I probably learned a lot of my creativity. She is a watercolor artist on the Big Island of Hawaii, and that's pretty much what she did as a profession for the latter part of her life, and you know, raised a raised five boys basically with that, you know, that income from being an artist. So from her, I'd say the creativity, and then from my dad, probably hard work. He was my soccer coach all growing up, and yeah, I would say he instilled in me, you know, where hard work will get you if you just keep at it.
How about you, Joe D?
For me, I'd have to say it would just be giving everyone the benefit of the doubt. Like if you're going to meet someone, or if you don't know someone and you see them, don't judge them. Just give them the benefit of the doubt that they're a good person, and then you can base your judgment off them later. Just treat everyone with respect, pretty much. And if it turns out someone's a piece of shit, then they're a piece of shit. But you want to give them a try. Let them try to be a good person, you know.
Boom.
Was there ever anything, Joe, that you remember your mom telling you like not to do over and over again, and then you just kind of ignored her, and then one day you realized, oh shit, she was right.
Everything, probably.
Literally everything.
Literally everything. Yeah.
Literally everything we did in high school.
Yes. I don't know. I can't name any specific.
Who was in trouble the most in high school out of you guys?
Probably
Adam.
I got in the one big trouble, but I wasn't, other than that, I wasn't very troublesome. I actually got good grades. I was president's honor roll all through college as well. So
what was the one big thing that you did?
Eat it.
What did you
have a suck on that?
suckle on that. At the time, marijuana was not legal, and I got caught engaging in marijuana activities.
This is about like 3 years ago.
Engaging in marijuana activities is the best term I've ever heard.
Yes.
Push, what about you?
So there was
what
that.
What about me as far as my parents or as far as...
Yeah. No, just as far... No, well, I'm sure you got in trouble a lot. I feel like you have a little bit of a troublemaker inside of you.
I was a bit of a troublemaker, but I actually never really got in trouble. I got away with everything, which was good. I think my mom definitely is like the creative one, the musical side of my family. My dad has like zero musical ability. My mom and her family are all very musical. So, she definitely, I think it's a pretty similar story. I think my mom was more of the creative side of my family, and she really supported me in doing whatever I wanted to do. And was always kind of like my biggest hype person. And then she's at my house right now sanding and staining a table for me. And we've been doing nice projects, she's taking care of my plants. And my dad was definitely the hard worker. He was the guy that went to work every day, 6-7 days a week, was out of the house at like, you know, five in the morning, and was come back at 7 at night, and mowed the lawn, was like always, you know, trying to force me to do all those kind of jobs, and made me work construction when I was in college and high school for summer jobs, so that I was motivated to not have to do that for my job as an adult, which it did. There's nothing worse than digging ditches in the lava rock and Kona heat for like 6 days a week, 10-hour days. So that definitely motivated me to not want to do manual labor for my rest of my life. So yeah, they both instilled good values.
Micah Brown, how about you?
Oh, hey.
Hi.
So I would say for my dad, he kind of instilled in me doing things the right way. And, you know, and that involves like the process of something, but also like when nobody's watching, you do the right thing kind of thing. So I think in one word, I would say integrity. Just always trying to do things the right way, whether it's, you know, not cutting any corners in like an arduous process, or not cheating like when you have a chance to get away with it. Just that kind of mentality of like doing it the right way, going about things the right way, attention to detail, which I think definitely has shown up in certain aspects of my life, like especially with music. Just, you know, I can obsess over things a little bit too much maybe, but finding that balance of just like being proud of what you did and coming up with a good product, and whether that's a product or just like whatever, you know, your life in general, just being proud and not cutting corners. And then with my mom, I think she definitely instilled in me the love of others and just being caring for others. A lot of times growing up, we weren't always the most wealthy family, but my mom would always make it a point to like adopt another family in our community, in our church, or someone that like didn't have any money to give their kids Christmas presents one year. And we would like go buy them presents, you know, even though we weren't getting a lot of presents ourselves. It was always kind of like, she was always more about showing kindness to others. And, you know, my parents were Christians when I was younger, so I was raised in that Christian faith. But I think that was the best thing about that upbringing, was like, she definitely spread the love of God to others. Being a good person and channeling that love from that divine and into humanity, you know? And I think she's a beautiful person. So
respect. Did you ever get in trouble in school, MB?
I stayed pretty clean. I mean, yeah, I never really got into like serious trouble. I got suspended once. I think I was like making fun of another kid, and then I felt bad about it. So it's like,
calling him stinky nuts.
Is that a Dobro? You know,
yeah. So I
he was know, a bit br- he was a bit good. Bromophobic back in those days.
You just coined a new word, Poosh.
I coined it last night. I'm gonna really try to push it.
How's the Twitch streaming going, Poosh? You did some acoustic stuff recently on there. Is there going to be some more of that coming up in the near future?
Yeah. Well, like I said, my mom is here, so once they leave, I'm going to get back to kind of my normal schedule of like, you know,
your mom doesn't like
riding the Peloton. She's in my office, so I'm like invading their room right now while they're doing stuff. But yeah, no, we have over 150 subscribers now to the channel. It's going really well. Obviously, it's not 100%. You know, I'm not delving in 100% yet just because I have a baby, but it's, you know, as soon as we get some time to really kind of put more time into it and get it flowing even harder, I think it has a lot of potential. But yeah, we're going to do, as soon as I have my social media day this week, I'm going to do another acoustic and keep trying to get people over there and, you know, hanging out, talking music, video games, whatever. Maybe we'll do some other things. If anybody else wants to jump on, we could do that. Talk movies, surfing, food, I don't know, whatever.
Boom Kanani. What is this Boom Kanani that y'all are saying?
It's not y'all, it's just Adam.
I keep hearing it. I keep hearing it everywhere. Everybody's,
it's because you're saying it. Everywhere
is this
you
your
go.
New company that you're like trying to like
No, it's like a thing know. That it's I have a no thing idea. That it's a thing that people in Hawaii say, that's like boom shakalaka, the equivalent, but it's like boom Kanani.
Whatever you got to do, whatever you got to do to feel younger, Adam, go for it.
I don't, boomer. I don't know where I heard it first, but I can't. I cannot.
MB dropped the boomer Kanani on him.
No, I don't. I don't think so.
Oh yeah, I did.
No, that never happened.
Is the Peloton stuff that you guys are doing? MB, I know you have one. Poosh, you have one. Can people come and race you on that?
Yeah, they can race me if they want. If they want to lose. No, yeah, you can follow me on Peloton. I mean, it's not that interesting. You just look at my stats and stuff. But or if I'm online, you can jump in the same classes. Mr. Poosh with 3 O's. You're welcome to follow me. Whatever.
And then
I don't know. If you think watching me play video games is boring, then following me on Peloton is probably like, you know, a quarter of as cool as that. So if that's your thing, go for it. But hey, if you have one, I mean, you might as well.
There's a couple of super fans out there that just want to follow anything you do. So
hey, this counts. You know, you're welcome to join me on a hit 20-minute hit ride with Alex Toussaint anytime.
I will say I do follow Mr. Poosh on Peloton. So
yeah.
Wow.
If you want to see Poosh riding to Britney Spears and some pop hits, check him out on Peloton.
I do, and it's awesome.
All right, it's now time for our new segment called Mr. Operator, where we answer your questions on the air. If you want to have your question read and answered on the air, text or call us anytime at 805-225-6886. Also, we are taking some voice memos at podcast@irationmusic.com. Just go ahead and email us a question and we will read it on the line. This week's question was texted to us and it says, I see that you guys are huge foodies and love to have big family dinners as a band. What was your favorite restaurant that you went to as a band? There are some pretty amazing band dinners that we've been to. And they're feasts. They're feasts. My favorite personally was in Las Vegas when we played at the Mandalay Bay when we were on tour with Slightly Stupid, I think. And it was this, what was it called? It was called just like Steakhouse.
Strip Steak.
Strip Steak. And it was unbelievable. Everyone was getting like Wagyu steaks and just the sides were flowing. And we drank probably what? 10 bottles of wine, and then we had to go and play a show right after, and we were all in a huge food coma. It was a terrible
performance
idea.
Level was
meat sweats were high.
That also goes down as the most expensive band dinner of all time by like a lot.
Yes.
That was the week Marina went vegan for about a year, and that was like the first week that she was vegan, and she loves steak too, but so she's just eating like a plate of broccoli, and everybody's like eating these 45 day dry aged ribeyes, and she stayed strong though. I couldn't.
There was like, we were eating like, it was like the steaks were like $120 a pop or something like stupid like that. And then it's just one of those Vegas restaurants where everything's overpriced like by 30%. So like the wine was like super, super expensive. Just everything was ridiculous.
Also, the birthplace of the Marrow Luge. Colin luged like a $250 bottle, a glass of red wine, like through a bone marrow, like, and just dripped the wine from the top and drank it from the bottom.
It was debaucherous, to say the least.
Yes,
that is such a bougie dish. Adam, what's your favorite?
This one just comes to mind first, but it was in New Orleans. I think, Micah, you found it. It was called Luke. And the reason it stands out to me is because it was the first time I really had oysters and kind of realized that I liked them. I kind of had always avoided them. But we must have had, I don't know, 200 oysters on the table or something like that. And I know Kaysen had at least like 30 or 40, right?
I can put down a solid 30.
They don't really take up very much room. Yeah,
that one stands out to me as just a memorable one because it was... New Orleans is such a unique city, and it was a new food that I kind of was introduced to and ended up liking. So,
Kaysen Peterman?
I'm going to have to go with the Fish Camp in...
I was waiting to see who would say that first.
Yeah, in Atlantic Beach, Florida. That is one of our spots that we always like to stop at when we're down there. We have days off, and boom, kanani!
Uh-oh.
Oh no.
Oh.
I'm texting Haley to remove your phone from you, Adam.
No, but they have they do a whole fried snapper there and it is bomb. And we like to go in there and post up and eat seafood. It's our spot, Fish Camp.
Part is how they you know, when Case orders it, they like bring out two different ones and like which one do you want?
We had our friends from No Lane up there for dinner with us one time when we ate there, and I just remember when I put the order in, their like mouths dropped and they were like, my buddy DJ Pihowski was like, RIP to the marine life of Northern Florida, because we ordered like six of every dish. They were just like, holy crap.
He just is like, you guys are picking up this check, right? Or are we split?
That's also the spot where Photo Boys, Sean, and Chris Fick learned that you can't just sit at any table that you want when there's a 45-minute wait. And Adam had to school them. So they just sat down at a table.
They just walked right in, past the line, and just plopped themselves down at an empty table next to us. I'm like, that's not how restaurants work, fellas. You gotta go put your name up. They had no clue.
This isn't Chipotle, boys.
Jojo, what about you, man?
Let's see. I'd have to say, well, it's a bit more casual and maybe a little bit more lesser known. An old Irish joint, McDonald's, is the first time I got really bad diarrhea on the road. Yeah.
It's supposed to be your favorite meal, Joe.
Is that the first band dinner that ever, that you guys just were like, we got this band card? Where
I mean, I will say diarrhea is a bit of a luxury when you're on the road.
No, there's a place in...
it's as close to a normal BM you can get.
What's that place in Montana? Blackbird? That place is always pretty fire.
Damn, that was what I was going to say. All right, go for it. You got it. I'll figure something else out.
We don't go there very often, but when we do, we always make a reservation. It's called Blackbird. There's Blackbirds all over the country. Yep. Like if you go to a town, you type in
Blackbird. Chicago too.
Yeah, exactly. But it's just good. It's like locally sourced food, vegetables and like elk and stuff. It's legit.
Yeah, it's got a wood fire oven, which is so the bread and everything is super good there. It's in Bozeman.
And Bizzle, what's your favorite?
I mean, I'm so bad at remembering names and cities and where we ate. Like, what's the spot? I know in Seattle, what was that?
Jewel.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's probably, I mean, it sticks out as one of my favorite meals just because the meals that they prepare and the dishes that they serve are super unique and a cool fusion between like French and Asian. And yeah, it just, and good wine. And I think we just had like everybody there. It was like 20 people at the time I remember. And we overtook that like bar dining area and just went to town and it was awesome. But we've also went there in smaller groups too, like with the Assad from Pepper. And I think I've been there with like my sister and stuff. And so usually in Seattle, I try to, if there's time, stop by Jewel. I think Poosh knows the chef, right?
Yeah. One of the girls we went to high school with, her little sister is one of the chefs, one of the cooks there. Her name is Cecily Kimura. And so that's how we kind of got the first reservation there and got to try it. And it was like, we got our minds blown away. So
yeah, it's a cool, you know, there's a lot of good vegetarian dishes. There's a lot of good seafood dishes, some good meat dishes. So there's something for everybody and they're all elevated and unique and different and just an interesting, memorable experience for sure.
Poosh, you always book the restaurants. Before you tell us what your restaurant is, can you tell us the process behind finding the restaurant?
Yeah, so I mean, a lot of people, you know, generally look at Yelp for their, you know, restaurant stuff. But when it comes to stuff like that, I kind of dive in a little bit deeper, go into like Eater or Thrillist.com and kind of look at what the best restaurants are in town for that year. Because sometimes Yelp is a good, you know, if you're just looking for something right close to you. But if you have time to kind of plan it, you have a day off where we can get Ubers there, you know, it's like 15 minutes away in a city. Sometimes it's worth the journey. So yeah, I just kind of delve in and I look at, you know, a place that has all the things that we're looking for, which is like a well-rounded menu where you kind of have more basic stuff for kind of some of the guys that are in the crew that are like, they list like their steak and potatoes or meat and, you know, starch or whatever.
Basic boys.
And then you have the stuff for the guys like us that are a little bit more adventurous eaters and are willing to try new things and try different things. And obviously the wine list is a big thing because we like to drink wine on our days off. And it's my one day of the week usually where I can, you know, have a few glasses of wine and not worry too much about what I feel like the next day because it's usually either a round of golf or, you know, a whole lot of nothing. So, yeah, and I think these guys listed a lot of my favorite places. You know, Blackbird was one place that I really love. I would say one of the other ones was early days was in Chicago was the Girl and the Goat, where we went to the Girl and the Goat and had a pretty insane meal there. Tried some pretty adventurous things. It was back when I was still eating the meats, but I think we ate like they have a dish that's like duck tongues and like we had stuff, all these crazy dishes that were actually really delicious. Not something I'd eat anymore, but it was good. And we had a really, really good experience. So
what happened to Colin?
Yeah, we're
Colin, yeah, had to like go to the bathroom and make more room and come back.
We also had a meal in Chicago at an Italian joint where we all, another one. Chicago's a really good food city, just FYI. Like, we always have really good meals.
We tend to go overdo it in Chicago for some reason.
Yeah, we went to an Italian joint and it, you know, Italian food, it's one of those things where it's like, it's really, really good until all of a sudden it's just like, you're so full that you like can't move anymore because it's all the starch and like meat and stuff. And so pretty much, I think like a third of the people ended up having to like leave the dinner like early and like either go back to the bus and like vomit or like go to sleep.
It was me, Jody, Peepers, and Nijo. I think we're like, we got
it's kind of gross.
I was there too. It got me really sick.
Yeah, it's just debaucherous at a certain level. And like, you know, I think we've gotten a little bit better at ordering, you know, a reasonable amount of food. But it's like in the early days, there's when you're ordering for like 15, 16 plus people, we have guests a lot of times. It's you don't want anybody to be like sitting there and like not getting to try something or getting or leaving the meal hungry. You know, it's like the whole point is to get everybody like feeling good and, you know, reset for the week ahead. I will say the other place that I remember that I just thought of, we had a meal in Portland, Maine. And I can't remember what the name of the place was, but we had kind of a back table. It was a really small restaurant, and we drank like so much good wine, and we were lining the wine bottles up
on the wall, yeah,
on the wall behind us. And every dish that came out was like insane. And I never heard of the restaurant. Like, we just booked it kind of last minute, and it was honestly one of the best meals we've ever had. So Portland, Maine, a sneaky, sneaky good food city as well.
My first band dinner that I had with you guys, it was in, I think we were in San Diego or maybe it was Oakland. And I remember sitting there, I was next to Dave Dutt, who was playing percussion at the time. And everyone was just ordering so much food. And I was so broke at the time. And I whisper over to Dave, I'm like, I don't have any money. Is this going to be like a split? This gonna be like a split check kind of vibe. I was so nervous. I was like, oh my God, it's going to decline.
We like to do that.
This
we
one's
like
on the new guy.
Sometimes is we like at the end of the meal, we just like drop the check in front of like somebody that like a guest or something. Here you go, buddy.
Shout out two of our local favorites, like the Lighthouse and Poosh. Social your other tap? One is
Local Tap local House. Tap. Yeah, LTH, Chef Dan, and Lighthouse, yeah.
Our producer Chris is saying that his favorite was Buca di Beppo, that one time that we went there.
Boo! We did go there, I do remember
that. We did go there.
We did, in Redding, California, which, you know.
That was the only place there. Well, boys, thank you all for coming on. Congratulations on the album release that will be out in just a couple of days, and you guys have anything else you want to say about the album before we send off? Poosh, want to say anything else?
We're super proud of it. It was a collaborative effort. Everybody put in a good amount on this album, and I think that it shows, and I think that the album, it's from start to finish, is a nice little journey. And the feedback that I've got from a lot of the people that are fans of the music is that it's up there as their favorite album of all time from us. So I think, don't take it from me. Take it from people that actually, you know, are fans of the band and have been for a long time. They really like it. So I think we're stoked. Yeah, I think we're stoked to give it to you.
Well, we'll see you guys all on the live stream. Thank you all for listening to this week's episode of Irations the Uplifter. Don't forget to subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever your preferred podcast platform is. We hope you all stay safe out there. Go check out the new album that is out this week. And remember, when the news gets you down, you can always...
Boom, Kanani!
To the Uplifter. Boom, Kanani.
Bye, Boomer.
I can feel it now, sitting in the sun, thinking about the past, change is gonna come. Say goodbye to me, forever will be us. I'll always be there, I won't break your trust. Know that the change will do me good. Please just know I gave you all I could. I will wipe away your tears, I will make you smile, I will braid your hair. Sorry about the style. In the dark of night, I won't leave your side. You can feel secure, I won't let you hide. I know that the change will do me good. And I'll do all the things I know I should. And you'll learn from me. You'll learn from me. You'll learn from me. You'll learn from me. Followed my dreams, you can follow yours. I won't let the world make me insecure. I will always try to show you who you are. I'll always be me, sometimes less is more. And I know that the world is mostly good. And I know that the change will do us good. 'Cause you'll learn from me.